Welcome to the 26th, the official podcast of the Mecklenburg County Bar. As an MCB member, we know you deserve every possible benefit for your dollar. Our focus is to provide exclusive insight and resources ranging from business development to member spotlights and everything in between. You serve the public. Now let us serve you right here on the 26th.
Hello, and thank you for joining us on this episode of The 26th, an MCB podcast. I'm Robert Ingalls, and I'll be your host. If this is your first time joining us, this podcast is intended to serve as another tool among the multitude of resources afforded to Mecklenburg County Bar members. And as such, we're splitting the podcast into seasons, with each season highlighting a different topic based on requests from MCB members. This first season is all about business development, and features attorneys from all walks of practice, from large firms to solo shops, sharing their unique stories of building practices. We're going to hear what worked and what didn't, and where they see the future of business development going. After you finish with this episode, just click that subscribe button in your preferred podcast player, and you'll get notified when new episodes are available. Our guest on today's episode is attorney Chris Connolly of the Law Office of Christopher A. Connolly. Chris was telling me a story as we began recording this episode, and the episode just kind of unfolded from there. So we are jumping right into this one. Enjoy.
I got to do all the travel that I always wanted to do, but never did. Because I always had the excuse of like, well, it takes too much time, right, or like, you know, how am I going to get away? But basically this was, I went and did whatever I wanted to do. I also took towards the tail end of it. I said, okay, I really have to be, this has to be more than just like see the world kind of stuff. So I took a course on coaching towards the end of it. And I said, this is the 2.0 next career that I want to do. I want to be able to coach lawyers about wellness. I also want to coach them about efficiency and coach them on how to run a business and how to make it worthwhile as possible, because I have seen that a lot of lawyers pretty much talk themselves out of getting paid sometimes.
Oh, sure.
Which is unfortunate, because we're not talking about where a lawyer is trying to cheat a client. That's the different world. But a lot of lawyers don't get themselves the fee that they deserve because they don't have the gumption to ask for it. They don't have the belief in their own abilities to ask for it. They don't want to make somebody mad by insisting that they paid what they agreed to pay for. And a lot of times lawyers are their own worst enemies. They are, they believe, they don't want to make anybody mad. They don't want to go against the grain. They don't want to look like they're greedy. They don't want to look like they're fitting the stereotype of the greedy lawyer. So they say, okay, I'll just kind of do it. He doesn't have it, or I'm not going to push him or whatever. And they just don't get what they deserve. They don't think they're worthy of getting paid a good fee. Or they say, well, the guy down the road, he's doing it cheaper, so I guess I got to do it cheaper also. But a lot of times, these are really good lawyers who are trying to undersell a really bad lawyer, and they're basically shooting themselves in the foot. There is basically the Kia. They're a Lexus, and they're trying to undercut Kia on price. So they shoot themselves in the foot, or they say that they don't want to make some, the guy doesn't have the money. I'm like, well, a lot of times, they do have it. They just don't want to give it to you.
Sure.
If something comes along that they want to buy, they're going to buy it. And then they tell you, well, I can't pay you because I went out and bought X, Y, and Z instead.
I've seen a lot of younger lawyers, especially ones that come out and maybe set up a small firm or set mm-hmm. up a solo practice, get caught in that a lot.
Right. Right. They say, well, the guy doesn't have it. Basically, they're giving themselves a cop out for not pushing for it and insisting that this client pay the fair fee that they have negotiated for. They just kind of walk away from it. And because lawyers are really bad businessmen, the law is such a consuming profession that we walk away from business opportunities. We don't know how to run a business. We don't know how to run things efficiently. We don't want to make the tough decisions of telling a client, well, if you're not going to pay what we agreed to pay, I have to withdraw from your case, or I'm not going to file a general appearance until you do that. And whatever the reasons that you're giving me are, there, you know, it, what it comes down to is just like buying food at Food Lion. If you can't walk out the front door unless you've paid, you can't say, well, I'll pay you next week, or something else came up. You have to cash and carry.
Yeah, and that's a really good analogy, because that's one that somewhere early in my career, somebody kind of gave me that same idea, was if they can't afford to pay for it, then you can't sell it to them. Like, don't cut your prices. Like, you don't go to Walmart, and they're not going to say, oh, well, you can't afford the $1.50, so we'll give it to you for 75 cents.
Right.
But the trap I also see younger lawyers, having been one, fall into mm-hmm. it, is sometimes you need that 75 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, man, but if they leave, I have no cents.
Right.
And so you start kind of making this deal with the devil with yourself.
Right. And that can become, you know, there's times when you've got to, like, take that lower fee because you've got to pay a bill and something is better than nothing.
Yeah.
But I also think that you end up, that can become a vicious circle. A vicious cycle, or whatever that term
sure.
is. You basically will start accepting a lot of excuses because I've got to pay a bill, and then you're going to find out that you're actually not able to pay any bills because have so dumbed down your practice where the word is getting out that all you can do is tell him, like, you know, you don't have it, and he could take it or leave it, and lawyer Joe will take whatever you give him. And I've been in that trap too when I first started out, where I said, well, I got a bill to pay or something's better than nothing. But I have also found out that the best thing to do is to insist on it, because once you start negotiating against yourself, it's a vicious cycle. You will eventually find a reason to negotiate against yourself in a lot of opportunities. And people think that, okay, if that's what you're, if you don't think you're worth it, I don't think you're worth it either.
Right. So I want to jump in and kind of dive backwards a little bit and talk about where you started. Like, were you one of those people, because I totally was, that was like, I'm going to be a lawyer one day. Like, was that something that was on your trajectory, or did you find it later in life? Like, how did that law career begin?
My uncle was a lawyer. He was a very successful personal injury lawyer up in New York. And I always remember how he had such a passion about his work. He also lived very well. He had 8 kids. His wife didn't work outside the home, understandably. And they all lived pretty well. They got to travel pretty well. And he was also very enthused by his work.
Yeah, that was part of the attraction for me as well.
Right.
Was people that were practicing law tended to have this life that I thought was enviable.
Right. Not only they lived well, but they liked what they were doing. And he was also, he came up through the hard knocks. He, as a lawyer with a young lawyer with a fledgling practice up in New York, and he had 4 newborn kids, Irish Catholic, so that's what happens. He decided to just chuck it all, and he came down south. And he helped do some voter registration back in the 60s. I think it was the early mid 60s. But he got his butt kicked. There are stories of him getting locked up by some backwoods sheriff in a gas station. He got and he was told, like, we're either going to frame you or you're going to go home, Yankee boy. So he didn't yield. He kept on doing his thing, and eventually he did what he set out to do, and he went back home and he continued his law practice. And he actually did some civil rights cases up in New York. He was in a rural area of Long Island where they were not allowing black people to be in the volunteer fire department. So he sued the volunteer fire department, which is, pretty brave. And I do think that some of those areas up in New York were probably as could be as racist as some areas in the South, but he took on those challenges. But the short of it is he lived well, and he enjoyed his work, and he also had a lot of fun, and he got to do a lot of great travel and a lot of nice things in his life. So that was the inspiration to do that. That kind of set the wheel in motion, and I just followed that. I never thought I'd be a criminal lawyer. But it turns out that one of my first jobs out of law school was being in the Legal Aid Society up in New York, which is a lot like the public defender, and kind of had an aptitude for it. And then one thing led to another, and I waved into North Carolina. I got a job with the public defender here, and that was my skill set, and I liked it. It was people intensive. I could not sit in a library all day or sit in an office all day. I've got to be out in the courtroom where it's kind of gritty, and you know, we get some great stories out of it.
Sure.
I kind of envy the people who sit there and work in the banks and they just tell, you know, they have no stories to tell. We got crazy stuff to talk about all the time. And it's almost like, you know, we take it for granted that something crazy will happen on pretty much on an hourly basis. So we get to do that. Eventually I went out into work for a lawyer who was in private practice. He was a small solo practitioner. He had some associates, and I learned how to run the business of law from him. And that's a big step when you go from the public sector to the private sector. Nobody's giving you a check every 2 weeks from Raleigh or the state up in New York where I had worked before. So you had to really make sure you were getting paid for what you were worth.
And what was that transition like, going from where you're getting that steady paycheck and your clients are handed to you, to moving out into the private practice world? Because I don't know if they were teaching it in your law school, but they weren't teaching business development in mine.
Nope, they were not teaching it in my law school either. And this was back then when I went to law school in the 80s. They didn't teach business back then. But you had to learn real fast, because if you're not making sure, if you don't have discipline, if you don't have bookkeeping discipline, and if you don't have accounts receivable discipline, you're easily going to get upside down, and you'll be stuck back in those positions where you're taking some money because you need because you have no money, and you're taking some money to pay some bill that has to be paid, and you're not getting what you're worth.
Right. So did you have a mentor in the employer that had hired you? Did you
Yes.
learn some of that yourself?
Yes, I think he was. His name was Paul Kaplan, and he died a few years after I started working for him. He was a great mentor to work under, and he really schooled me on how to run the business of law. I learned some things of what not to do. I also learned a lot of things what to do. And he was a good businessman. He also was a good lawyer. But eventually he passed away, and I really was out on my own. I had to make sure we had clients coming in the door, that they were well taken care of, and that they also paid what they agreed to pay.
Sure.
Or else, you're not going to be a lawyer for long.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, I'm Greg Hicks, and I'm the Director of Digital Media here at the Mecklenburg County Bar. Thank you so much for listening to The 26. You know, as staff, we want to do our best to make sure that you get the most out of being an MCB member. So that's why, in addition to this podcast, MCB members are eligible to reserve meeting and event space here at the Bar and Foundation Center during normal business hours. You can head to mecbar.org/benefits to see all that the MCB offers, and we hope to hear from you soon.
So what would you look at as the main pillars of business development? So if somebody's coming out of school or maybe coming out of a larger firm and they're looking to get into a smaller firm setting like yours, it's going to be a very different situation for them. Like, what are the pillars? What do they need to be doing? What do they need to be focusing their time on? Because that's where I see a lot of young lawyers, where they can start to misstep, is they have this finite amount of time, and if they use it poorly, it's wasted. And so where are the main kind of the strongest ROI, I suppose, in business development?
Return on investment?
Yes.
I would say that the first thing you've got to do is take good care of your clients. You've got to really have a good product out there. You've got to have a good service out there. You can't be a shill. You can't be a thief. You've got to do a good job for your people. You've got to take good care of them. You've got to return those phone calls. You've got to make sure you're in court and you're advocating for them and they see you doing it. Another pillar, I would say, would be to make sure that your reputation stays intact. You do. I think there is some jealousy among lawyers where if they see you're doing well, they're going to start getting jealous of you, and they may start like saying, who's this guy and what's he about? And people start thinking the wrong things about you or saying the wrong things about you because, you know, they'll trash talk you. I think if you become aware of people trash talking you, you have to do some self-analysis and say, okay, how did I bring that upon myself? Did I do something wrong that I need to correct? Or if I didn't do something wrong and somebody's just being a hater, I've got to confront that person. I have heard of way too many lawyers who have heard, rumors being spread about them or around about them, and they do not take care of it, nip it in the bud, as Barney Fife said, nip it in the bud. If you don't do that, it'll become a forest fire in no time. You've got to find out who's saying what and confront that person. And another pillar would be to get good staff. And not good staff where you have too many people too soon, but get good people to work for you who are loyal, who are honest, who are going to present you well. Because when you're in court, they're the ones who are answering the phones. They're the ones who are greeting the people. And they are your first impression. So my standard has always been I pay them as much as I can afford to. Even if it's more than what the market is, but you get the good people, and then you don't have to worry about them messing up on you. You don't have to worry about them stealing from you, hopefully, or mistreating clients or leaving for the next opportunity. I have, in times made the mistake of hiring somebody. The market rate is this, and forget the market rate. Pay what you can afford them because that gratitude will come back to you. The gratitude, I believe that they'll have some gratitude for it, and it'll pay back in multiple times for you.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to retain them. They're going to treat your clients well. And that, I mean, retaining them is one thing because it costs a lot of money and opportunity to train again. But even just when I go to any business and I'm treated poorly, odds are I'm not coming back.
Right, and you're going to put a Google review saying this person's a jerk, his staff is a jerk, and don't go there.
Right.
The easiest thing to do is you pay him what you can. The couple thousand dollars extra you'll pay him per year, it's a lot easier to pay that than try to retrain somebody, have to replace them on 2 weeks' notice and retrain somebody else, or to try to make it right with a client who's been mistreated because this employee is resentful.
Yeah, and I mean, what is that, one or two clients, if you pay him a few thousand
dollars? Right. I mean, it'll come back to you. It's the karma of business.
Sure.
And I think another pillar would be to make sure that you're running it as a business. It's one thing to be a good lawyer. It's another thing to be a good business person. If you're not going to be a good business person, don't be in business. And it doesn't make you a good person or a bad person, but just find something where you do not have to use business skills. There's places in the government sector. Maybe you don't. You won't be a lawyer. Maybe you'll be working in some other private business somewhere. But if you are not running your law firm as a business, you will be upside down pretty fast. And I do find that market forces are one thing, but I think that lawyers tend to be their own worst enemy in terms of how they talk themselves out of getting paid what they deserve.
Sure.
And a lot of the coaching I've done with other lawyers is about how not to talk yourself out of what you deserve.
Yeah. Are there any resources that you would point lawyers to for marketing and business development or just business knowledge?
Well, I think you've got to get a good mentor. Find somebody who is trustworthy. Find somebody who there's a good rapport with. It's almost like finding a spouse.
I've heard that before.
Right. It's either you feel it or you don't feel it. Or like in AA, they say getting a good sponsor. You got to have somebody who there is a good chemistry with. You trust them and they know what they're doing. You can hire somebody like me to coach you, and I will sit with you as often as you need, and we'll walk through the steps of what's working, what's not working. But I think I don't think there's any school to go to for the business of being a lawyer. It's the School of Hard Knocks, and it's also getting a good professor in that School of Hard Knocks, somebody who's going to walk with you through that journey, because it can get very messy very quickly. I see a lot of young lawyers who hang out a shingle and They're upside down pretty fast. They're taking cases that in faraway jurisdictions, and they're traveling all over to all these different counties trying to handle a speeding ticket here and a DWI there, and they're not giving good service to any of their clients. They're spreading themselves thin. They're not available to answer the phone. You could easily get yourself tangled up if you don't have a good plan and stick to it.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot too. And one of the things I don't even think that people think about when they first start that is how long it takes to even learn a system in a new county.
Mm-hmm.
You show up in that new county and they do not practice law the same way that they practice in Mecklenburg County.
And they don't like the fact that you're from Mecklenburg County.
No, they don't. Take the badge off.
Right. They don't need some lawyer from Charlotte coming in there to tell you how they do it in Charlotte. Just like just like they don't want people from up north coming down here and saying this is how we do it up north. Same principle, and they get very resentful of that. They get very territorial about their business, about their protecting their pond. I don't know if I could blame them. I don't know. You know, people don't want competition.
Sure.
I've learned the hard way a few times that going to these other counties, you will usually regret it. It'll not pay off in the long run. In terms of the opportunity you lose, the balls that get dropped in other counties, a lot of bad things can happen.
Yeah, definitely. So do you have a system set up to garner leads? What kind of advertisement structure or referral systems do you have in place currently?
Well, I've got a website is key. You've got to have a good website, and some people try to cheap out on the website and get their buddy to do it. They've got to get it done right. You've got to. That is your point of contact. That is the first impression that somebody's going to get of what you do. If you have a half-baked website, you're going to look like you're half-baked, and they're going to go right past you. It's almost more of a first impression than the staff member that we talked about before. A website is how the world sees you.
Your storefront.
Right, it's your storefront. It's your sign. It's somebody across the planet can look at that website, and if you look like you're a joke, they're going to think you're a joke, and they're going to go to the next guy. So website is key. Social media is key. Also referrals, putting your name out there. And when you talk to people, you've got to have an elevator pitch for them. And I hate using the term elevator pitch, but it's kind of a cliche. But you've got to make it clear to them why they should be hiring you, or they should be referring their clients to you, because you're good and you're reasonably priced and you're honest. So I think those would be the pillars of starting the new business, starting a law firm, or even just keeping an existing law firm going.
Sure. Now, when you said generating referrals, do you have any recommendations for community involvement, for actually getting out there and generating those relationships and partners who are going to turn into referral sources?
I think you've got to go fish where the fish are. If you are looking to be a criminal lawyer, you probably don't have to be on the board of some museum uptown. You may be better off being in some board of some faith-based organization or some local neighborhood organization, especially in particular where a neighborhood where your prospective clients may live. Or in some kind of organization, let's say you have a lot of Spanish-speaking clients, you want to involve yourself in organizations that cater to them and help them out. For example, if you're an immigration lawyer. You don't have all the time in the world. Pick your time appropriately. Use your time appropriately. You don't need to be on the board of some museum downtown when your clients will never go to that museum. There are good causes, but I'm sure there's some downtown lawyers or uptown lawyers who can spend their time there. They don't need you.
Gotcha. Now, are you using any software to manage your contacts or, keep up with existing clients and maybe for former clients? I think I've said before on the podcast that, my grandmother had a Rolodex on her desk, mm-hmm. and she would keep marks on it of how frequently she talked to someone and when mm-hmm. she needed to reach out. Do you have any system like that in place?
Not really. after this many years, I don't really have to have the digital Rolodex. I'm just kind of out there enough, and people come by enough. And of course, when somebody refers a case to you, make sure you acknowledge them in some way. Say, hey, thank you. They came by to see me. Of course, don't divulge any confidences, but acknowledge them and say, thank you for sending them. Thank you for thinking of me. I'm going to do a good job for them.
Yeah. And the handwritten thank you card is one that I started using a lot, because people just, they don't send them anymore. So when mm-hmm. somebody does get one, they're like, ooh, fancy.
Yeah, they think that, wow, isn't this so nice?
Yeah.
I don't do that, though. But I'll send a text message or something like that. Yeah. Because the good thing about a text message is not only have you sent it, it's in a format that they're used to, but they also then capture your phone number.
Right.
It's like right there in the top of their pile of texts. So they're going to stare at your name for quite a while.
Well, I don't want to keep you here all day, but I'll ask you to look into your crystal ball. Where do you see the future of business development going? Like, it's moved a lot into the digital space. You know, the website's so important now. The having it on social media is so important. Like, where do you see the future of business development going?
Wow.
That's a big question.
Yeah. I would say it's going to come down to, we are in a people business. We're in a service business. It's going to stay as a people business, but just people are going to be reached with different modalities, whether it's social media or Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or LinkedIn or whatever. When it comes right down to it, it's still a people business. Whatever next thing they invent, whether it's tomorrow or next year or 10 years from now, whatever keeps you in contact with people, because we're in a people business, is going to help your business.
Perfect. Now, before I let you go, where can the listeners connect with you?
My email address is cconnolly@connollydefense.com, and my phone number is 980-263-8366. Again, 980-263-8366.
All right, perfect. Well, thank you so much for taking some time out.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The 26th. Head to mechbar.org to hear more from this podcast, suggest future topics, and review member resources.